You are listening to the Heart of Tradition podcast. And just a little addendum to what we were just speaking of on the podcast about gluten sensitivity and glyphosate and glycine. One interesting story that I found some French bakers, French, Italian, Spanish family. They had like a lot of European roots, and they set up a pizzeria here nearby. And I had asked them, because they also did not agree with the flora, with the commodity in the gut flora of the gluten-free types of grains and these newfangled types of things and all these strange like unprocessed yuca and yucca root and cassava and tapiocas that take a certain type of traditional fermentation type processing. And so now we're not doing that anymore. And so we're just getting them as they are. And so there's these compounds, and there's a lot of guatrogens and things in these foods that harm other, you know, like organs or glands. And so it's like, wow, we're getting the wrong stuff into our body. Now, not all gluten-free formulations are made of all of these. Like, you can find a little like rice flour. You can find some, you know, arrowroot, rice flour, a few little things that may be outside of that. But in general, you know, people tend to overdo this, that, or the other, or they overdo grains in general because they think that they're trying to still get that carb. But, you know, they should be doing maybe potatoes or another type of carb or rice or something maybe to get them just through that window. But we do need to get that gut flora back on track, especially in the West. We can't eat rice as our only contributor to that flora forever. I mean, the Asian has a much bigger pancreas. This has been proven due to history of eating rice as a main staple. So we don't have that same reality, and we have to find a different carburant for our fuel system in our body. But I'd ask them, well, how did you guys get around it? Because you don't like these grains, because they believe in the life-giving power of grains, and they see the grains that way, and you can't take that out of them. That's what I love about some of these more traditional cultures, is that that's something they just feel, and they're like, nope, we're not going to do that. So they ended up taking their pizzeria, and they ended up, which they serve a lot of great dishes too, not just pizza. They serve like, you know, very intense like duck and a lot of like French and foie gras and different foods. So it's not just like some cheesy pizzeria, but like they do the pizza for people, and they do a gluten-free pizza. And I was like, well, what did you make as a gluten-free? Like, how did you create your batter and stuff, like your dough? And they were like, well, you know, we just used something that had less gluten. We didn't do the high, and we found the right kind of like grains, but we didn't do a non-gluten free dough. We actually added gluten to it. I mean, like through some of the grains we used. They weren't telling me the exact recipe, but they said it wasn't like a typical, it was traditional grains. And so, you know, there's everything from millet, and you got certain grains that don't have gluten, right? But they found a combination. And they said, well, what we had to do was we had to buy these refrigerators. And so these refrigerators we would buy, and we would heat. I mean, we would like cool these. We had to invest in these special refrigerators to try this idea, because they'd figured it worked. And so and some of their smaller refrigerators, and they started to invest in it because they wanted to do it for like in a more permanent way. And so they ended up doing like creating the dough for the pizza of this batter or this substrate, and then they would put that into the refrigerators and keep it at 3 degrees. So what would happen was normally it would ferment and it would get really, really big and it would expand out and all this stuff. It kind of breathes, yeah? So because of the tight temperature control, it wouldn't breathe at all. It would just stay the size it was with a slight modification. But what would happen is the gluten would eat itself. The bacteria would eat itself from within because it's warmer on the inside. And so the gluten would eat itself from within, and they had to do it. I don't know how many days, it was 3 days or five, or I don't know, but it was a process. And so they would serve this pizza, which had gluten in it, to gluten-free people, and they would have no reaction. Now, I'm not sure if this is like high celiac, like insanity, like people that like can't even eat an almond that's been processed in a factory with gluten. Okay. But most people there are eating gluten-free pizza without knowing that it's got gluten in it. And it's because they just did the smart move of letting the gluten eat itself and work itself down. So that's an interesting trick. But like I said, that might be a way to stay within the traditional world and still be able to pull some of this off. But it's all about learning and learning to make bread and learning to do some of these things. I really recommend that even for someone who's in this category. Like learning to make a more traditional bread that, you know, there's chestnut flour and there's different things you can use. And I'm not saying to be specifically just in the nut category, because I don't think that that contributes perfectly to the gut flora. I think that that mannose exchange system cannot be modified by just throwing a bunch of nutted seeded breads down there and saying we figured it out. It's like, no, it needs to have the mannose basis, which is that kind of like glutenized type of protein, which allows for a slower digestion. And we need to see that gluten is just the harder thing to digest in the gut, period, not something that's bad. And so what happens is, I mean, depending on the quality of the grain you're getting, and you're not just using like standard hybridized grains, but like that reality being understood, it's, you know, you need a certain type of stickiness so that the commodity in the gut flora doesn't mold and it gets delivered right to each member and allows for you to have energy. So that energy creates better concentration and everything in the mind for that 3 or 4 hours after you've eaten, up to 5, without you having to eat again. And so this kind of pattern allows you a very stable system without stimulants. And so without that, you're going to be stimulating everywhere because you can't figure out what's happening and why you go up and down with the glycemia. I mean, there's no, it's not, you know, it's not a mystery why glycemia is, the glycemia of the bread is written on the baguette in France. They've already figured out this reality, and they've used it to counteract cheaper breads that would not take into account the glycemia, the glycemic index. And so they would, you know, they knew that people could cheat with cheaper, more fall apart kind of bread because it didn't have that chewy, qualitative gluten particle that we've diabolized. You know, but that they're seeking that actually, because that, and they're not seeking a hybridized version where they've tried to increase the gluten either. They're seeking a natural state. And so, you know, it's like natural fluoride in water is good for your teeth, but synthetic fluoride from the uranium industry and nuclear industry added to toothpaste is not, right? So there's a whole different thing here. And so, so that's one thing. I also bumped into something from the previous podcast that I bumped into on, kind of live, and I was like, I need to look into that a little bit. So the whole idea of gluten and glutamate being connected. So gliadin, which is the structure that gluten is composed of, breaks down into glutamate, and the glutamate is also, it also breaks down into two essential adamant. Amino acids, proline and glutamine. And so it breaks down into like 30% of it is this glutamine, which creates a free glutamate roving around in the body. And so it's almost like, it's like you have the slime and then you have like the tight protein. And the tight protein is the one that can cause nerve damage and things like that. And that's the glutamate and how it works. And so that tight structure, I don't know if it's, you can say protein, crystalline, whatever you want to call it, but that tight structure and then the slime. And so the slime actually helps to calm that. It's a little bit like fat and sugar, a little bit. Like, so the gluten acts as a fat and what we call gluten, actually the proline glutamine structure has a fat part, which could be more in the proline, but it has a fat type of idea, which is not a fat. I know I'm just using it as a metaphor, and a sugar type of idea. And so it helps the sugar to be less toxic in the body, just like fat and sugar do. That's why French desserts are always composed around cream and butter and, you know, creme brulee and all of these ways that you can add cream to things to slow down the sugar. So, that connection is that the glutamate that we can eat in foods, like from that's in everything, especially prepared foods and prepared broth when it's not your broth that you make at home, and that has natural glutamine in it, but not this added stuff. Like these kind of realities bring us to a high level of glutamate, and the glutamate brings us to nerve damage. So the gluten sensitivity can also bring about, gluten, when it's broken down into its components, can also bring about this same nerve damage if the nerves have a certain weakness, which allows for that damage to take place. And so that would be the lack of the lysine and the other amino acids that help to coat, and the magnesium and other deficiencies, the K2 as well, which helps with the structural level and also with the lack of calcification on those structures. And so there's a lot of things that come into play. It's like a synergy. But just wanted to clarify that glutamate to gluten connection, that 30% of gluten is glutamate and it can rove freely and cause harm. There is a lot of neurological damage anywhere there's gut damage too. There's that connection there. So the more we mess with the gut flora, the more we mess with the brain flora, I guess you could call it, even though it's not technically the same type of flora. But, and so healing the gut is a key to healing and the brain enough to not develop degenerescence, degenerating conditions, and Alzheimer's. Is degenerescence a word, or am I speaking French again? But anyway, like Alzheimer's, a lot of these nervous conditions and Parkinson's, and where we have the nerves being affected, are all part of weakened brain structure, not only through lack of fat, which is, you know, your brain's like 50-60% cholesterol. It's crazy how much cholesterol is in your brain. Like, and you know, they want us to reduce that, even though it already reduces with age. I mean, come on, you'd think you would increase it with age, at least by the food, you know, butter and eggs and stuff like that. Soy-free eggs, of course. And not soy-free industrial eggs, once again, because then that's a false paradigm as well. But farmers market soy-free eggs that you can talk to people. So anyway, just wanted to add that little addendum onto the gluten-free podcast for people who want to go a little bit further. Come check us out at theheartoftradition.com for the best magnesium you can find on the U.S. market. The only non-solvent treated, the true Zechstein. Beware of all the fake Zechsteins out there and cheap plastic. And come check us out at theheartoftradition.com. Thanks.